Welcome to the Sad Fam Club, baby. You are enough.
Oh, hey. Welcome to Sadcast, a podcast featuring stories, art, and design from No Fun City. I'm your host, Becca Clarkson, wishing you all a happy Pride Month. What better way to celebrate than to spotlight a pillar in Vancouver's drag scene?
Hey, yo, Mama Dust.
Hey, T.
The city has so much amazing drag to offer. There are drag queens, kings, and things, comics, burlesque dancers, and witches. Oh my, the list goes on. My next guest is one of the first performers who exposed me to the grungier, more experimental forms of drag. The type that wasn't typically seen on the west side of the city or on RuPaul's Drag Race. In 2018, I landed my first job in a newsroom, RIP Vancouver Courier. I was assigned the task of covering Mother's Day in a new way, one that expanded beyond brunch and mimosas. After a little digging, I found out about a Mother's Day themed drag show happening on Commercial Drive. Art imitates life, so a drag mother is pretty much exactly what it sounds like. An older or more experienced performer adopts a drag child and shows them how to thrive and survive. That Mother's Day show brought me down to the bar, formerly known as The Penny, where I met Dust.
My name is David Cutting. A lot of people call me Dust. Some people call me Dust Quain. Those are the names that I'm known by. I use they, them pronouns. I am trans, non-binary, and aromantic. Yeah, those are my identifiers.
Dust is an interdisciplinary artist who does drag, organizes and hosts shows through their company, Sleepy Queer Productions, and makes music as a singer-songwriter.
I got sucked into the world of drag when I moved here in 2015 and immediately knew that I wanted to, like, create fun and unique events.
I've been attending their shows fairly regularly since we first met, the themes of which range from ugly drag, Shrek, Burning Man, and 80s and 90s rom-coms.
The foundation, I think, was given to me by my curiosity of drag. I went to so many shows, I showed up, I was an eager audience member, I befriended people. But I also, when I moved to Vancouver in 2015, I started working for a magazine, and I was like, one thing that I want to do to get into this community is to give back. And I heard tales about how hard it is to make friends in Vancouver, and I honestly think that it's true, but I don't think it's as malevolent as people make it out to be. I think that if you contribute anything to someone's life, something that can make it better, even if it's just compliments or just having a conversation with someone, being able to contribute helps sort of like bring those walls down. And so I wanted to contribute to drag by bringing it onto a higher platform. And so I started a project with this magazine where every month we profiled a different local drag performer. And it was great, and it was exciting, and it was something that had never been done. And it's now kind of something that you see a little bit more often with the rise in popularity of drag, and as drag continues to sort of, like, firm up its place in the pantheon of art forms in terms of being in the mainstream. Ugh, dreadful. But it's true. I think I was maybe some of the last of the new drag performers who got in before it became what it is today.
Do you remember your first drag performance?
Ooh, yes. It was at Shanda's show. She painted me.
Shanda, or Chandelier, is Dust's drag mother. When I met her at that same Mother's Day show on Commercial Drive back in 2018, she said she was retiring. But now, as Dust says, she's become
the literal queen of East Van Drag Brunch.
Okay. Back to Dust's first show.
Which was at a now defunct space on Davie Street called XY. And she had a like a sketch comedy drag show. And I just came and I did like a little 2-minute Liza Judy lip sync with her. And then after that, I changed outfits and went to the Junction and did a performance to like the full Junction space, which at the time, like, there was very few drag spaces. So it was very, like, XY, 1181, Junction were kind of the only places that were housing drag at the time. That was June 4th, 2016.
What feelings do you remember from that night?
I remember feeling just really excited I also remember feeling very not present. Maybe it was anxiety, maybe it was the excitement, but I also think that, like, I think it all just happened so fast. And it wasn't the kind of drag that we're used to nowadays, so there wasn't a lot of, like, meeting the audience and, like, yeah, it's an interesting to look back on it, but I don't really remember much, which is rare for me. But I think that that's probably just, like, an anxiety blackout. Yeah.
How does it compare? Because now you're performing as, like, the front person.
Yeah.
As your own band.
Yeah.
Dust and the River Children.
Yeah.
How do those performance experiences compare for you?
I say this every time we finish a show with the band, I say it to someone, I'm just like, this is like what I want to be doing. And also, it is a whole different ball game when you are up there and you are singing songs that you wrote with people who agreed to do this with you. There's a synergy that's created when everyone is like consenting and also excited. And one thing that I love about the River Children is that they are all incredibly talented musicians, and they all have, you know, interpersonal relationships with each other and me outside of the group. And I guess I think what's really cool is that I'm a 33-year-old person starting music for the first time, so there's all of these little things that happen that they are completely used to that are like just turnkey for them. And when they happen and I witness them, I lose my mind with excitement. Like the first time we were in rehearsal and I gave a vocal cue that I wanted to end the song, and they just brought it down and ended it because like we were all on the same level. I just lost my mind, and they were like, yeah. And I was like, no, this is amazing. And they were like, yeah. And I was like, okay, this it's wild to me because in drag, you are interacting with your mouth, the audience, and the song that's playing overhead. Whereas with music, I'm leading them, right? And I'm leading them, but I'm also being led by them. It's such a strange thing, but it's like just holding hands. We're just holding hands the whole time and holding on as tight as we can. And every little stroke of the guitar string or hit of the drum connects to something that we're all creating together. It just is so different than drag. And that I get to put the two things together is so magical to me.
Has it changed your relationship with drag at all?
Yeah, I would say that it has actually made me more excited to lip sync because I'm also like, but I also do this thing. Like, there's so much pride in the music thing that I was sort of like, before music, I was getting to the place where I was like, I don't really vibe with drag. It feels, this is so shitty to say, but I'm gonna say it. It just felt shallow. It felt shallow. It felt hollow for me. And it doesn't feel that way for everyone. And so some people are just like, yeah, it's amazing. But for me, it just got to this place where I was just sort of like, there's got to be something more to this. And being able to tell my own story, being able to like write songs and get excited and all these sorts of things, it reinvigorated all that. Where I was just like, oh, I actually am okay to lip sync because I know that I have this other thing. And that I'm committing time to it and that I'm building it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like my artistic practice wasn't whole, but now I understand that having an artistic practice is important. And so a piece of advice I would always give to young drag performers is think about your artistic practice. Is it your makeup? Is it your rehearsing? Is it, what are you doing that is for you to contribute to your art?
And I know that you were in Alberta when you first started creating music.
Yes.
So can you, if you feel like sharing, what was that journey like to go to Alberta and then return back to BC?
It was bad. It was just like a incredibly poor timing. And like no one could have predicted it. But like 4 days after I moved to Calgary, my dad had an aneurysm and passed away. And that's what sparked the like getting into music and like working on a musical practice. And it was literally like, I don't know, 2 weeks after that happened that I messaged Josh on Instagram, Josh Eastman, who is the person that I write songs with and who I perform with. And that's how we started becoming collaborators. And so when I say it's bad, I'm just like, it's marred with a cloud of grief that I just like, yeah, I don't think anyone deserves to feel that. And it's hard when I don't know. I spun out. I spun out and I needed specific kinds of support. And having newly moved, my anxiety just was not able to communicate what my needs were in a way that was, like, positive for what I would consider, like, newer relationships that were forming up there. Mm. And so it was incredibly isolating for that reason.
So I'm really sorry to hear about your dad also. What made you decide to return to BC?
Well, nothing really magical happened in the first 6 months of Josh and I working on music together. And then I had like a commune with some kind of a muse. And during that like 5 minutes, I wrote the lyrics for what would become like my first studio single, which was Innuendo. And I wrote it down. I was visiting Cranbrook. It was the first time I was back there since my dad passed away. It was a memorial of sorts. And I just, yeah, all the lyrics came to me. It wasn't sad. It was whatever. It was just a pop song that came. All the lyrics. The chorus came perfectly intact.
Really? Can you talk about that more? Like, when yeah. people say, like, oh, they just came to me. Like, where were you? Could you see the words? How did they come to you?
So I was in the dairy aisle of the Save-On Foods in Cranbrook, BC. And in the truck ride over, there was a song playing on the radio. And my brain was listening. I was in the mode of learning about lyrics. So I was reading a lot of lyric books. I was learning a lot about form. I was also starting to understand pop as very formulaic in a way that the brain recognizes so that it feels pleasure. And I was thinking about my first relationship because he worked at that Save-On Foods. So every time I go in there, there's like a jolt of like memory that comes back because I was freshly out. It was so exciting. It was so amazing. But I was thinking about my aromanticism and how that tied into that specific relationship. In my mind, I was just like, wow, that relationship was so rooted in innuendo. And then I was like, oh, that's interesting. Innuendo is a word that is made up of other words, in you and oh, innuendo. And then I was like, well, what if you put those words in it and just like repeated the first two words three times? So it's in you, in you, innuendo. And I just wrote it in my phone. And then as I started to write it into my phone, I could start seeing the forms of how I wanted the chorus, like the verse to go. You know, I wanted it to be like, oh, how does this always start? I was like, it always starts off slow. We're always fumbling. We don't really know where to go.
Gotta stop pretending that I know what I think I know. Tossing out lines, hoping you'll bite. They miss every time.
And it just poured, it like tumbled out of me into my notes app. I probably still have the note. But I just remember getting to the truck and feeling like just vibrating and just being like, I don't know what just happened, but I think this is awesome. And I remember copy and pasting it and sending it immediately to Josh. And the response I got back was, David, this is incredible. And I was like, wild. I was like, I literally wrote it in 5 minutes. No music playing. No instruments, no nothing, just the lyrics. And you know, we found the groove immediately, because sometimes the intonation of the groove is informed by the words, and sometimes the words are informed by the groove of whatever melody comes out of the guitar. So like, it's always this like synergistic thing. And a couple songs on Arcana were like that.
You still insist on calling us friends, though.
I know you don't get sentimental.
One of the things I didn't understand until I got into the studio was that it would be solely a learning experience. Not knowing music theory, not knowing music, all these things. I can still see where I fall short. But I also am excited now when those moments come up, because it's an opportunity to learn about the things that are magical about music. And I still lack the terminology, so I use a lot of slang words. And I'm still not 100% sure whether that's something that's infuriating to other people or whether they find it endearing. But there's certain things in music that I get really excited about when I learn. And some of those things are like, what makes your favorite musician your favorite musician? Is it the songs? Is it the lyrics? Is it the way they say specific things? What are the grace notes that make your favorite artist your favorite artist? And a grace note is like just a little note where you slide from one note to the next. Josh and I had a conversation about it a couple weeks ago because we were working on my next single, and I was like, we have to keep that take in. We were doing vocals. I was like, we have to keep that take in because that thing that I do with my voice at the end of that sentence, that's me. That's my stamp as an artist. So it's those moments of like finding like, what are the things that make you feel the most you in your practice? And I just don't have any other, I don't know how to play an instrument. I don't know how to do that. I know what I want it to feel like. And so there's a lot of esoteric feedback coming from me and a lot of practical feedback coming from my collaborators.
Arcana is Dust's first album, which they released in 2022. And this month they plan to release two new singles, or as they call them, Sonic Besties.
So in the whole period of making my first album, I didn't have a relationship. And then I got into a relationship just before Arcana came out. And then just after Arcana was sort of like settling and everything was good, that relationship like fell apart, for lack of a better term. And to comfort myself, I took one single line that I kept repeating to myself, to Josh, and I was like, I want to make a song out of this. And that became my next single, which is called 17. And it's basically a queer breakup song. And the hook is, I'm sorry I never got to be 17. And part of the heart of that sentiment is that I came out when I was 18. So like, the rites of passage, the feeling of love in high school, the like dating, all those sorts of things. I was also in high school pre-Glee, so it's a little bit of a different time. It's so silly, but Glee had such a huge effect on high school for queerness. And bless that mess for that. But yeah, I just wanted to capture like this thing because I kept thinking like, if I had relationships when I was younger, would I be better equipped? Would this be something that is a little bit hardier and more tangible in my life? And so that's the root of the song. That's where it comes from.
Do you find that you thrive creatively when you're in a particular mood? Like, be it down, high, low?
Thankfully, no. I feel like that's like that's a standard mode, you know, in the worlds of like the Phoebe Bridgers and the Taylor Swifts and all those sorts of things. But mm-hmm. like, I write good when I'm sad. I write good when I'm happy. I write good when I'm in love. Like, it's about being able to tap into that muse and know when it's time. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, I sometimes will be activated in that mode. If I'm processing something big in my life, sometimes I'll process it through writing something. I'm currently in a phase where I haven't written anything in a while. However, that's hot off the heels of writing three incredible things. So it's hit or miss. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have any things that you're like, no, that won't be a part of my music? Because it seems like you're really open to sharing like vulnerable and authentic experiences through your lyrics and through sort of how you engage in community. Mm. Is there anything where you're like, nope, just for me?
Sometimes I'll write a line that is just for me, heavily veiled in metaphor, and I'll include it knowing that it'll mean something to the listener that it doesn't mean to me, and I just don't talk about it. So like, I think it's more about coding things because I really don't want to leave things out for myself and for others. When I listen to songs that I've written with Josh, I hear certain things, and I've been told by other people that they hear other things. And so what's really cool about this song 17 is that it's going to mean, it's vague enough to mean whatever it needs to mean for whoever's listening to it, but it means something very specific to me. And I think that's the mark of a good pop song, is that it's relatable, but it's personal.
And you talked about with Drag how it was really important for you to give back to community. Mm-hmm. and contribute. Is that also something that like guides your music career?
Absolutely, 100%. So I know that when I do a music show for myself, people are going to show up. And so choosing who is performing in that show is very intentional. And it has it just has to be less people than a drag. Like, I'm used to, like, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 performers in a drag show. But, like, with music, it has to be different because you're showing something. It can't just be a person getting up there and singing one song. Every single River Child has their own solo project now, which is really cool. So my drummer Iris has Please Be Nice. Took you my blue Nissan, got the hatchback so we can't go long. Got a couple CDs, I got a couple songs. Fuck that, we never turn the radio. My bassist Allie, they have a band called Primp. Yep. My guitar player Kier has a project called Lowercase Dream. And now Josh is going to be having, you know, their own project, which I believe is going to be called Grammy Winning Nepo Baby, I think is what he landed on. And I see that, like, each of our success isn't at the cost of the other, but it is at the betterment of all of us that we're creatively fulfilled. Our debut show was packed, and it was really, really fun, and it was really, really terrifying. And it was the first time I performed with a band, and it was like something I dreamed about my whole entire life, and then it just happened. And yeah, I do have memories from that, and I have lots of videos, so, but also a little bit of anxiety blackout. But I remember singing, like, getting to the end of the set list, which was just the album in completion, and walking off the stage and just sitting down backstage, my like sweat running down my face, no one's around. I could just hear 100 people in the room beside me screaming more, 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 more. And I was just sitting there, and I just reached up behind myself and I found a roll of paper towel, and I just pulled off a piece and I just blotted my face, and then I put it down and I just sat there. I just sat there and I was like, wow, that happened. That happened. I've always wanted to do that. That happened. Wow, that happened. And then the door opens and Josh poked his head in and was like, are you going to do a... And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, I just fully blanked out and was just in absolute bliss and awe of myself because I had worked for 2 years to get to that specific spot. And it was just magical. And then I went out and we did Hero and, like, just... you know, tore the roof off the place. I am me, your hero, baby. I can kiss away the pain.
I honestly cannot say how many times I've seen Dust perform a cover of Hero, more often than not while traversing tables in whatever bar we're in. To say it's a crowd pleaser is an understatement. This recording is from a recent show Dust played at Strange Fellows Brewing, alongside Please Be Nice and Low Motive. You mentioned Hero. Can you talk to me about what that song means to you and how long it's been a part of your repertoire?
Since the summer of 2017, when I performed it live at my first, it wasn't the first show, but it was the, I think it was like the fourth or fifth show that I produced and organized in Kitsilano. And the reason I performed it was because the theme of the show was high school. And I have this vivid memory of being in a group audition to audition for The Wizard of Oz when I was in grade 10. A group audition is a harrowing experience. It is the worst when you are an insecure teenager. You have to get up in front of everyone and sing a song. Terrifying. But I remember these two girls got up and they were auditioning together because they were too nervous. and they sang Hero. I remember them singing it, and I remember going, that sounds like a really easy song to sing. And it's also just really good. It lives in that, like, early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s pop music that just, like, it feels like high school, it feels nostalgic, it still feels fresh. It's all of the things that I think that I want to capture with my drag. I want it to feel like it has one foot in the past, and then it has eyes on the future.
Do you ever feel like not singing it? Like, is anyone ever like, sing Hero! And you're like, no.
So it's like a party trick at this point. Like, I've sung it probably over 350 times. So I can pick it up anytime, and I usually have it at the ready. There's times when I don't plan on doing it, and there's times when I just don't do it. But, like, if one person says it in the audience, it happens. Like, it does. It's one of those things where it's like, okay. It's just, like, it's the easiest thing to do.
To give the people what they want.
Exactly. give the people what they want. Yeah, it's always those little nuanced things, but it's cool to have, like, one performance where people are like, no, we want to see that.
To date, what do you think you're the most proud of as an artist that you've done?
Oh, that's such a tricky question. I think the song that speaks, that I've written, that speaks the most to that journey and the most honestly is the one that I wrote for myself, which is Unicorn River Child. And I feel the past, present, and future of my artistic endeavors in this life in that song, because it's a reminder. It's a historical document of sorts, and it also speaks to some of my pains and is honest. It says a lot with very little, but it also brings together all of the moments in drag where I've watched people's lives change because they decided to cross-dress, basically, and lip-sync a song to audience, and I just see people's confidence change. And that was the journey for me, and so, you know, Unicorn River Child is that for me, where it just reminds me to, like, save a little part for myself and to always remember those little moments, because those are the ones that actually have the impact. The big moments, like performing with a band for the first time, so cool, but a drop in the bucket versus, like, all the tiny little thousands of things that it takes to get to where you are.
Took a thousand moments just to create this. You know my card's always a star. A fool's journey begins in the dark. It's just an arcane way of thinking.
I was 30 when I started, and I think that is the same career timeline that Jan Arden has. And I love Jan Arden. She's been a huge supporter of me and has championed a lot of, like, what I've been doing and has been so encouraging and premiered one of my songs on her podcast.
Casual.
I obviously followed her on Instagram for a while, and then one of the songs that I released as a promotion when I ran a GoFundMe to start, like, getting funding for my albums was a cover remix of Jan Arden's Could I Be Your Girl, and I posted about it, and she just followed me on Instagram, and it was like a 6-month period of her replying to my Instagram stories and chatting with me back and forth. And then in the summertime in August 2021, she was like, yeah, come on my podcast. And I went on the podcast with my friend Peter Breeze, and we just, ever since then, she's just been connected in the sphere, and
incredible.
It's cool. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And I would be remiss if I did not mention the vitriol going on about drag performers in the South. Do you feel impacted by that? Are you sick of hearing about it, sick of talking about it, or does it feel, like, pertinent to sort of the scene in Vancouver?
I have a lot of complicated feelings about all of that. And I think that the drag conversation and the trans conversation, it's obvious that they should be a little bit linked, but I think that there are some drag queens who aren't understanding that there's one should be prioritized over the other. I think trans rights over drag rights, personally. On an ethical level, I think one needs to be taken care of, because in our understanding of queer history, the cis gays got a lot of their rights, and they got a lot of what they wanted, and trans people still had to continue to fight, like, endlessly, and continue to this day, where we have a whole month where corporations slap slap a rainbow sticker on their things, they still have to fight for their rights. And I just think that pride should be trans forward, not drag forward. Drag is just the art form. Not all drag performers are transgendered, but a lot are. And it's always the transgender ones that have a political edge. Some cis ones do. I just think that there's a little bit more the community can do to show up for people who need their medical rights taken care of. So I don't see it fully affecting our community up here in any grandiose way. Obviously, we still have protests. We have all of these sorts of things. But we also see the government showing up for us in ways that is not happening down south. Obviously, there's the potential of like a conservative government incoming, but like, I don't think that's going to happen.
Where do you think Vancouver's community like excels at supporting its queer members, and where do you think there's room for improvement?
In our community, the most important thing is to be paying attention to mutual aids and contributing that way. I think that is the biggest impact that we can have in our community, is seeing someone needs help paying their rent, seeing someone needs help with their bills, seeing something like that. Because the more we feed into that, the more we pay that, the more regular that becomes, and the less people will see fall away. So like, if more people are speaking up when they need help, even though it makes them feel vulnerable, we'll be able to show up for them. So that's why I'm a huge supporter of mutual aids. Don't really fucks with nonprofits. I don't really mess with that because there's operational funding. There's all kinds of things that go into nonprofits. For example, donating to any corporate pride, regardless of the city, is nonsensical. Donating to large organizations that get a lot of operational funding, nonsensical. They will be fine, but the person you were dancing next to last weekend, who you smiled at and who you felt joy that they existed, who needs to pay their phone bill or needs to pay their rent or needs to get home to visit family because someone is dying or whatever the reason is, that's who we should be thinking about.
It's my life. I can cry if I want to, cry if I want to, cry if I want to. It's my art. I can rage if I want to, rage if I want to, cry.
If you'd like to support Dust, they have new music coming up this Pride Month. You can pre-save their upcoming single, 17, which is set to be released on June 23rd. And on that night, Dust will be playing a show at the Anza Club alongside performers Kylie B and Divorce. Then you can catch them at the Hollywood Theater on June 24th. They're opening for Hotel Mira.
You can find me on Instagram at Unicorn River Child, and the link in my bio will take you to everything.
Dust has a ton on their plate. When they aren't creating and performing drag or music and organizing events across the Lower Mainland, they work as a skincare consultant. On top of that, they plan to launch a tea company soon. The name? Spill. But they plan to stay an artist in some capacity for the rest of their life.
I don't know what that'll look like. I think with all the change that I've seen and the change that we probably can all be honest about seeing coming in the future, we have to be agile and resilient to change. So maybe there'll be times in my life where I make more art, maybe there'll be times in my life where I make less art, but you know, being adaptable, I think, is also like just a good rule of thumb when it comes to artistry. Yeah, it's ebbed and flowed for me. Like, I was at a peak when COVID hit, right? A lot of people were. Who knows what this world would be like if COVID didn't happen, for better or worse.
Do you think you'd be doing music if COVID hadn't happened?
I honestly don't think so.
It's overwhelming to think of how we'd all be had the pandemic never hit. And I want to be careful not to look for silver linings in something so devastating and destructive. But regardless of their journey, Dust has clearly reached a destination they were meant to. Their passion for music, performance, and community is evidence of that. As I mentioned earlier, Dust will be performing with Kylie V later this month. And they nominated a song of theirs to end this show on. The 19-year-old first broke into Vancouver's music scene in 2018 with the EP Lotus Eater, which they apparently recorded using an iPhone. Years later, they're playing major local stages like the Orpheum and Toronto's Drake Hotel with the band Men I Trust. Described as loquacious, emotional, and unique, here's Kylie V with their song, Catherine.
Catherine, none of us even like nicotine, but you bark and you bite like you've seen it all. I'm just happy to know someone's middle name. I'm happy to stand back and watch it all. I watched you grow up in a year or two. All your second guesses relate to me. And I wanna give you whatever you need. She's walking on.
Sadcast is brought to you by Sad Magazine, featuring stories, art, and design by local and emerging artists. The intro and interstitial music is by Kimmortal.